Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's B-Y-T-E.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome back to Star Wars Minute. It's the daily podcast where we analyze, scrutinize, and celebrate the Star Wars movies 1 minute at a time. I'm Pete the Retailer from PeteTheRetailer.com.
I'm Alex Robinson from ComicBookAlex.com.
And I'm Ken Plume from A Bit of a Chat.
Yeah, thanks for coming back, Ken.
Thank you for having me back.
Today we're talking about Minute 32 of Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens.
R2-3-2.
Oh, there you go. 32.
Not amused.
I guess the more tepid response would have been like, oh, sure.
You never know, you guys were doing this for years.
Mm-hmm.
Like a married couple.
Have they stopped making Star Wars movies yet? Jeez.
All right, fine. I'll do another one. Minute 32 starts with Rey bringing Finn back from the dead, and it ends with Rey directing Finn to the gunner position, if you know what I mean. Which reminds me of in wrestling, there's a thing called the gorilla position, which is not a move. It's not a hold. It's just like where you stand backstage if you're kind of, you know, so basically like the stage director. Like the last person that the wrestler sees before they go out into the arena. And so,
is that the one that tells them they're special?
Yeah, basically. He gives them each a kiss.
You just go out and be you.
Yeah.
I'll be here. Always.
Turns out the true champ is the friends we made along the way.
And the gorilla was never there. An actual talking gorilla, by the way.
Yes. Well, it's named after Gorilla Monsoon, famous wrestler, then commentator / producer, who would often stand there and kind of, you know, give everybody their last, you know, little pep talk, make sure they looked okay, and you know, send them out on cue.
Give them their lunches.
Right. I was so disappointed when I found out Gorilla Monsoon was a guy and not a monsoon of gorillas.
Yeah.
Like a Sharknado?
Yeah.
Really?
Sharknado. The Sharknado people should be talking to Gorilla Monsoon's estate and be like, well, you know.
Special weather alert, a gorilla monsoon is approaching.
There you go.
Yeah.
Star Wars.
One thing in this here's something that my personal take on one scene in this is different than the script notes that I just read. So once Rey brings Finn back from the dead, she says, you know, she kind of wakes him up and he says to her, "Are you okay?" And she looks for a second and then says, "Yeah." Which I took as like, you know, he just got kind of blasted. And when she wakes him up, he's like, "Oh, like, are you okay? Like, are you," she's like, "Yeah, idiot. Like, you're the one who got blasted. Like, I'm waking you up." So it's like kind of a sarcastic, like, yeah. That's kind of how I took it. But in the script, it specifically says that when he wakes up and says, like, are you okay? Rey is touched and, like, she's taken aback because nobody's ever asked her that in her life, pretty much.
Aww.
So she's like, wait, like, why does this person care about me? So it takes her a minute of, like, oh, yeah, I'm okay.
Yeah, I got none of that.
She does not seem like she's acting that note.
No,
maybe there is something to this J.J. Abrams being mad about their acting.
And for the better, because how do you convey that with characters who we're still getting to know?
Right.
Regardless of the flashback we've seen, you still don't know that depth of character in Rey for quite a while.
Yeah,
right.
All you've seen is her basically being exasperated with Finn to this point and him being a doofus. So the only note that does make sense is for him to go, or for her to go, what? What are you, nuts? Yeah. Are you aware of anything that's going on? Come on. That being, again, the catchphrase of The Force Awakens.
Well, now it's turning into like a Job, like, come on.
Yeah, Finn is clearly now her burden.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's, I still get the sense in this that she actively resents that she's now saddled with having to take care of this guy.
Why doesn't she just leave him at that point? Like, they don't have a relationship or anything.
Well, I can understand they are being actively attacked. So, you know, maybe the point to process it would be after this, because he's ready to leave.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
You know, we'll see that reiterated again and again, that Finn is ready to bolt.
I definitely saw it played out the way you said, Pete, that she was kind of like, yeah, because especially coming on the heels of that, why are you holding my hand thing? The idea that he's expressing concern for her seems like more kind of like patriarchal, kind of like that along those lines, you know?
Right.
Like, oh, why did you ask me if I'm okay? Because I'm a woman and I can't take care of myself? That sort of a
Yeah, she doesn't take enough of a beat in her consternated look when he says that.
Yeah.
To make it seem like she's being wistful or reflective or touched by this tender moment. There's no tender moment beat in how that scene is paced. So ultimately, no matter what the script says, if JJ's directing this and he was obviously a pedant about other things like cleaning, that he could have asked for dozens of takes of this and felt that this was the beat he wanted, which is nowhere near that scripted beat.
I'm picturing that like, you know, that's like the equivalent of running laps. You know, in the making of this, when he's like, you know, they're shooting the scene, like, you know, Daisy Ridley kind of flubs the line a little bit or just doesn't deliver it, you know, with the right kind of emotion. They just changes, just like, all right, cut, go wash your junk, and like makes her go do more like washing, do that wash.
You gotta come up
junk.
With a better phrase.
She's got to go with the patriarchy.
JJ told another actor to go wash their junk. It's going to be a long day. I don't know. I would certainly love to see more footage of him directing to get a better context for how he actually was on the set with the actors.
Right.
Disney so far has been very tight-lipped with their, I guess in The Last Jedi, you saw Rian Johnson directing, you know, the making of stuff on that one. But they've been pretty tight-lipped about their behind-the-scenes stuff.
Well, maybe they don't want footage of whatever was happening on the set.
Oh, baby.
A supercut of 4.5 hours of junk washing takes.
Mm-hmm.
was deemed somehow uninteresting for general audiences to get a sense of the production.
General audiences.
Hello there. Well, I think they're also, it's partially maybe they don't want, you know, in the moment, they don't want us thinking differently. You know, they want the audience view of the movie and the production to be very controlled. And then also they're like, well, if if we release this down the road, then we can sell a new version of it.
Right.
Like we can save this for the 10th anniversary edition, then we'll save this bit for the 20th anniversary edition.
Then you'll get
edition.
Your junk washing supercut.
Yeah, exactly.
It should be like Clue, where there's like 10 different scenes. You know, depending on which version you watch, you'll see different scenes of her washing her junk in different ways.
Right.
You know?
Well, so Lin-Manuel Miranda wrote a whole song for it.
Yeah.
Junk washing boogie.
And then it's the whole, there's one disc of junk washing. This is the anniversary edition.
But that's a Target exclusive.
Right, yeah.
You have to chase down all of the different supercuts of pedantic direction moments.
It comes with a little, like, bobblehead of Ray washing junk.
No, Daisy, look like you're touched in this moment. No, don't look like you're just touched. Not exasperated. Stop doing exasperated.
Right.
Wistful, sensitive, touched, heartfelt, beat, never mind. Moving on. This is not your character.
So is the TIE Fighter strategy more or less just to blow up everything?
But them?
Well, I don't even know if they're singling out but them. I mean, they just seem like they're just kind of... If their goal is to recover the droid, it seems like they're just kind of randomly blowing stuff up.
Which could possibly include that droid, because they're...
Yeah.
They're not being very discriminate. They're not being very accurate.
Right. Oh, so maybe that's... But so going back to what we were talking about with I guess it was last minute, maybe their ordinance is set to just kind of like concussive blasts to just knock people out and knock things over, but not totally destroy it.
Shock and awe.
They could be, you know... If they wanted to, there's a little switch or a dial or something they could just be vaporizing everything, but they're just basically looking to wreak some havoc and be able to recover the droid.
No, because in this sequence alone, we see them hitting some stuff that's causing fireballs.
Oh, yeah.
Which would be a lot more than a concussive blast knocking someone out. I don't understand how they're perceiving this... one person they don't know at all, Rey, and Finn, who has already proved himself to be not the best top-of-the-line First Order stormtrooper, as active threats to whatever they're trying to do. They also don't have blasters. They're not firing back at anyone or anything. They could have sent, you know, as we talked about in the last minute, where was the other... 15, 20, 50, 100 stormtroopers to just surround them by numbers and take them into custody.
Is it possible that the First Order just isn't that smart and they're just like, yeah, let's go get him?
We've never seen that in any iteration of the Empire that they do dumb things.
It's true.
Crackerjack. The word is crackerjack.
Now I'm going back to the Stormtrooper buddy system. I'm picturing them all just like forming a perimeter around the outpost and holding hands and just kind of walking in towards the middle.
Oh, buddies. The Red Rover tactic.
Find your circle of friends.
Hands across Jakku.
Connect. Everyone sing your circle song.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
So our friends start running for their lives, mm-hmm. and they're like, hey, let's go to that ship over there to get out of here.
Right, the quad jumper.
The quad jumper.
Which I kind of do want to see the adventures of Rey and Finn and BB-8 in a like a nice, fast, state-of-the-art ship. Then I want to see what the adventure would be like if they had gotten in that ship.
The alternate reality?
Right.
Well, let's see. Let's talk it out.
If they had gotten in that ship like 3 seconds, you know, a minute earlier, and then just gotten completely destroyed. Like if they are all like, all right, good, we're it.
The end. So let's assume that they got into the quad jumper and then they got off Jakku.
Mm-hmm.
And then what would they have done? They would have gone to the rebel base, I guess. Assuming everything else happened the same way, that BB-8 told them the plan, where the ship is and all that stuff, they would have gone to the rebel base and I guess dropped BB-8 off. It's like in Star Wars, if Alderaan hadn't blown up.
Yeah, it just would have been a commuter mission.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And they would have joined the resistance, potentially. Or I guess Finn would have been more
Starlift.
Found out that he's not.
And then I guess Rey would have just gone back to Jakku because she wouldn't have.
She wouldn't have gone back to Jakku. Why would she go back to Jakku? The whole drive of her was getting off Jakku.
She wanted to go back for her parents. She wanted to go back and wait for her parents.
Yeah. It takes a while for her to not want to go back. She wants
to just learn. Ship.
Right. She wants to like be able to leave, but then also she's waiting for her parents.
Sad.
So hopefully she would have had a better living situation. She would have lived on the ship. Yeah. She would have parked the ship.
Although if she went back, that theoretically that's somebody's car.
So she's not going back. No matter what, she's not going back.
Or maybe she could
other
trade
adventures
it.
Would find her.
There you go.
Yeah, she could trade
it for a different ship. Maybe the resistance would give her a ship. Then she could fly back, go back to her AT-AT house, and
there's a brand new washing station in this.
Yeah,
well, I don't have to use the communal washing station anymore.
Just like that's what she was like. Oh, do you want, you know, like thank you for delivering these, you know, the plans. Like, could we get you any? Like, what's your reward? Like, name anything, it's yours. And she was like,
a Winnebago.
Yeah. Do you have a dishwasher?
What did you say? Like 20 portions?
No, 40. 40 portions.
Why didn't I say 40?
Rey.
Stupid daughter of garbage people.
Put my helmet on.
speaking of garbage, I do think it's a good gag when she's like, oh, that ship is garbage. The quad jumper gets blown up, and then she says, oh, the garbage will do. And then there's the reveal of the Falcon. It's a good thing because first you think, oh, the punchline is the garbage will do, and it is the punchline, but then afterwards it's immediately followed by the thing that everyone's gonna go, oh, look, you know what I mean? It's a nice bit of not trickery, exactly. Audience manipulation, I guess.
Right.
Although they call that.
Although we do see it before its reveal.
Yeah.
And it's a very quick pan across, but is in the background.
No one watching it was like, oh, look, there's the Millennium Falcon in the background.
Somebody
were running.
Yeah,
don't say no one. True. Somebody went.
That's true. You're right. You're right.
I wrote Outrider/Potato. Because those are the other things where it's just like, you know, like, you, hey, did you know that the Outrider is in the special edition of Star Wars? Like, what? And like, if you go back and like frame through it at one point, you're like, oh, there's a little blur that looks like Dash Rendar's ship, or like the potato in the asteroid field, or the, you know, whatever it is, the sneaker.
And, yeah.
You know, it's like that kind of a thing where it would have been like, hey, did you know that the Millennium Falcon is actually like, you know, outside of Nima Outpost? Like, what? You'd have to like step through it. And
pause it minute by minute.
But in the theater,
something.
Yeah, come on. Nobody's that obsessive. In the theater, as soon as he said, "What about that one?" and she said, "That one is garbage," and they didn't show it, I'm like, "That's the Millennium Falcon."
You did?
Yeah. The first time I was like, "Oh, they're talking about the Millennium Falcon."
He folded your arms and went, they're obviously talking about the Millennium Falcon.
Come on. Yeah. His arms were folded from the start.
I stood up in the back of the theater. It's like, Falcon. And everybody's like, what?
Oh. Just sits down in his seat at the beginning, crosses his arms, and goes, show me a movie.
Yeah, but I mean, that's, you know, I had, what, 4 seconds of realizing it first, you know, like I was 4 seconds
were
ahead
you
of the
excited
curve.
Were you excited? Yes. By the reveal,
I was excited by the reveal in rewatching the minute before this recording, and just watching that clip, I still got tingles from that, just kind of like that showing the Falcon with the music going and the whole lead up. I was like, I'm still excited about it now.
Now, were you enough of a super pedant fan, and I'm not removing myself from this equation, to look at it when you first got that reveal of that piece of junk and went, that's not the dish?
Why, I think, had we seen
and had that dissonance? Before? Well, yeah, the toys had been out, but still seeing it on the big screen.
Right.
For me, the nostalgia was a little bit tempered.
Well, but
because you have that cognitive dissonance in your head of this is an iconic thing from your childhood that, you know, you held in your hands and flew about your room and played with that silhouette. That form is ingrained in people's minds of our generation. So that one little thing for me, and I'm not
ruined
saying
the whole movie.
Not yes, yeah. I was
my childhood was ruined.
That's why you're boycotting Lucasfilm.
My hands were crossed too. for me there was that one little beat of that's different.
Yeah, and you know there, it makes sense. It implies history, and that the round dish that we loved got knocked off in the second Death Star, and that like it. It all makes sense logically, but I do. I get it.
The round dish that we, his owner that we love, is going to get knocked off in the third Death Star.
Awful lot of knocking off in Death Stars. This saga.
Yeah.
Knock it off. I actually, I'm going to go on the opposite extreme, and I'm saying I'm going to disappoint. I was disappointed that the ship wasn't more different. You know what I mean? Like when they go in and stuff, I really wanted to see like, oh boy, this has been 30 years since I've seen the ship. Yeah, something like the hot tub or something, but it's, you know, I guess Unkar Plutt was like, I want to restore it to exactly how it looked 30 years ago in the classic Falcon days.
Like Duquesne had it all like nice, and then he was doing a meticulous restoration for like historical accuracy.
Yeah. I'm just waiting on the parts.
No, this dish was knocked off in the battle, second battle of,
with the fifth Death Star. This is actually the sixth coming up. You'll hear those stories one day.
It's like 3PO's arm. They had gave him a red arm, and I was like, oh, that's cool, because it implies that things have happened in the meantime. And then, of course, immediately they dialed it back. We're like, no, he doesn't have a red arm. We were just kidding about that. It's C-3PO all along.
Wait a minute. It was?
We'll get some
questions. I don't think it is. I think you're thinking of somebody else.
I might be confusing him with PZ4CO, so I agree. Well,
so disappointed in you.
I also wish that there was a Han Solo / Falcon theme. Like when the reveal of the Falcon, I feel like it should have been a more Falcon specific bit of music or whatever.
Well, that is, right? That's now the Falcon theme. They're like, dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee.
Is it? But that's like, they use that in other places.
Yeah.
So this is where what you're saying, a pop song would have gone really well.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, hey now, like,
start
you're
me
an
up,
all star.
Or Walking on Sunshine, right?
Oh, that, totally. Yeah.
As soon as they see it, then just cut into Walking on Sunshine. Then the whole like rest of the escape from Jakku is all just a montage.
Yeah. Montage. You say montage.
Montage.
We had the BB-8 trailer shot.
Yes.
The one that filled us with so much trepidation briefly.
Mm-hmm. Obviously CGI.
Right. So in that, you know, teaser trailer, or the, I don't know if it was the teaser, or the first one that we've, you know, the first trailer that we all saw, assuming that you saw it, Ken, that shot of, you know, BB-8 just kind of rolling down, you know, across with the fence behind him, and that whole thing that was just like, you know, caused me to roll my eyes and be like, oh, there's more of this.
During the movie, you mean?
Yeah, when I was standing in the back, my arms crossed.
I'm not even going to sit down.
No, the first time seeing it in the trailer, like until they did that reveal of bringing BB-8 out on stage at Celebration, like that kind of skepticism that you know, because we had been burned slightly by doing things just for CG sake.
The cute, overly cute, toyetic factor.
Yeah. Yeah, and having that, it screamed, you know, like all kind of. I was like, all kinds of things are going to come out of those panels, which wasn't far off, but you know,
yeah, they got you. They still got you.
Yeah, but it was well done overall, and I'm so happy to see this shot now and know that it's not what I was worried it might be. So,
yeah,
you look back at Pete in the past, and you're like, he worried for nothing.
Exactly, idiot.
Pity the poor sprinter that they hired to have to run along with him.
Yeah, really.
In his green suit, run faster. Now go clean your junk.
So they get on the Falcon.
Uh-huh.
And so Rey has definitely been on the Falcon before, right?
Or knows of it. I mean, she knows that it doesn't fly or hasn't flown. We find out in the next.
Right.
She mentioned this minute where she says it. Because that I don't get either, that it hasn't flown, but she's aware of it.
She's also later on in the movie, she keeps talking about like, oh, Onkar Plutt rerouted the hydrogen converter or whatever. You know, she seems to be intimately familiar with all the improvements and stuff that have been made by Onkar Plutt. So I'm guessing under Onkar Plutt's kind of like he owned it and she was kind of like
a hired hand.
Yeah, I guess so. Something like that.
Yeah. Well, she works for him in general, right? That's the idea. So maybe she was, you know, helping him restore it for a while, but then they kind of gave up on that because she's been there, don't forget, for like, you know, 15 years or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Has it been there the entire time? When we haven't, has any of the stories yet covered what the history of the Falcon has been, when it was lost, how it was lost?
Only the owners. The owners are cataloged later, like the chain of custody, but we don't really know the specifics.
So they're owners between Han and Unger?
Yeah. Somebody stole it from Han, and then somebody stole it from that person, and then Unkar Plutt
stole it from
the Lakeville
Road
Irving
boys, who stole it from Duquesne, who stole it from Han Solo. I think
Duquesne.
I might be missing one chain, one link in that chain, but
yeah, so we'll get to it later. Yeah,
so there's probably still a fair amount of time in ownership in this gap between the end of Return of the Jedi and this. Before it ever wound up on Jakku.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
There's been a lot of adventures it's had.
Yeah.
So I'm curious if this was a thing that always existed throughout her childhood being there.
That's a good question.
Or that appeared later. I mean, it implies it's been sitting, because she says it doesn't fly.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like it's, I mean, he must be respected enough that no one messes with his stuff, because it's just sitting out in the open. There's no hangar.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a couple of tarps over it.
Yeah.
He doesn't seem to use it if she says it doesn't fly, but it clearly does.
I have a great idea. Great idea for a Star Wars TV show that I'm going to give away for free right here. We have a Millennium Falcon TV show, and every episode, it's like a different owner having an adventure on it. You know what I mean? Like, would be Lando, one would be Han, then you could have the Road Boys, you could have Duquesne, and so, you know, you could have all sorts of people. The ship could be 2,000 years old for all we know.
The one episode is Unkar Plutt sitting on it, eating a meal.
Right. Well, you know, like bossing around like a 10-year-old Rey, who, you know, making her fix everything. It would be like Watto and Anakin all over again.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, yeah. Joy. Well, you know, if it gets Simon Pegg some work, sure, whatever.
I bet he would just do the voice, because someone else would be under the suit, though.
No, no. Either he's going to be in the suit, or he can't have it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I'm sorry, Simon. All or nothing. You wanted this burden.
I guess this could be for tomorrow. I'll save that for tomorrow, one note. But I did wanted to link this. You know, we've been kind of stepping through some of the other movies to see like how the pacing matches up, and there were a lot of kind of one-to-one kind of scene matches early on, and this is not quite one-to-one, but in Empire Strikes Back, minute 32 is Imperial troops have entered the base, so there's stormtroopers coming in chasing our heroes out to the next action sequence.
As they escape on the Falcon.
Right. The Falcon Act doesn't actually show up in 32, but that's the actual... Like,
so it's not really one-to-one, is what you're saying.
No.
They're both Star Wars movies.
Yeah, yes. Basically. They're stormtroopers in both minutes.
I mean, statistically, that is astronomical.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they're just copying it. No, that's, you know... thematically, there's similar things going on, you know, in Empire and Force Awakens at this point. So,
our heroes are in jeopardy and need to make their escape.
Yes. That's
there. I fixed it.
There you go. The myth, the modern myth.
Now it's back to 1-to-1.
But yeah, other than that, I think, more stuff for, you know, this continues this storyline thread keeps going all week. That's all I had. Did you guys have anything else specific to this minute?
I'm good.
I think we're ready to rock it on to the next one.
I think I summed it all up when I said Outrider Potato.
Yeah.
So, no, enough said.
Can sell the T-shirt.
Can you come back tomorrow?
I would love to.
All right. Well, we will. We'll see you tomorrow, dear listener. Hopefully, we'll see you tomorrow. Well, you'll hear us tomorrow. And in the meantime, if you'd like to, speaking of T-shirts, if you, I don't think we will have this up by the time that is up. I don't think we're going to have the Outrider Potato shirt up by the time you hear this.
Pre-orders will be up.
But if you want to check out all the other shirts that we have, go to StarWarsMinute.com/merch, MERCH. That'll take you to our TeePublic shop, which has, you know, dozens of designs up there, of all kinds of different things. You can get a Sice Noodles pinup. You can get a... And it's wonderful, wonderful nonsense over there. So go check it out. Get some stuff. We'll meet you here tomorrow for a brand new Star Wars Minute.
Star Wars Minute.